Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Another week, and wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, especially if you are one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, maybe some house chores. Or are you sitting in traffic? Oh, don't worry, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes with gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free, thanks to our sponsor this week, Squarespace.
Squarespace!
They made that possible, bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show, all about games, and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who knows that every day is Mother's Day, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff. I hope you, this was your first, right?
Very first. Yeah, well, I mean, I've experienced Mother's Days before, but for my wife, it was the first Mother's Day as a mother. It's my first Mother's Day as a father, married to a mother. So yeah, it was big. It was big times, man.
Oh, that's awesome. I can't wait for you to get your first tie later this summer.
Oh, is that what happens on Father's Day? I get a tie?
I feel like that's what happens.
Well, I do dress up every day to do this show. So I wear my tie and my Mack Weldon's, and that's about it, as we know. Hey, we got a big show to talk about. There's gaming news. We're ramping up. We're adding – what do we add? Coal, I guess, to the hype train? Is that what powers the hype train?
No, we're on a hype hyperloop.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. It's using super fuels and the power of the sun.
Or a hype tunnel under Los Angeles. That seems totally okay. Elon, why not?
I like it. So we got the hype train stoking up. E3 is just around the corner, so we'll be talking big news. We got games to talk about, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know that DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh man, we're excited because DLC stands for Destination Looking at Computers. Because from Ars Technica, we have senior gaming editor Kyle Orland joining us. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, I really thought you were going for DLK over there. You switched things up at the last minute.
Yeah, sometimes they're easier than other times.
We're NetherRealm Studios over here, you know, like we keep the C where it belongs.
we like looking at computers at Ars Technica. That's true. So
indeed,
can't really argue.
We're excited to have you. Had a lot of listeners actually suggested you to be on the show. So first timer, we're excited.
Hi, everyone.
For you to be here.
Yeah, thank you for your recommendation. I hope I do proud.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. And we will jump right into it and start the show the way we always do. The story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week. Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. And you can always submit stories for our consideration using our hashtag on Twitter. That's DLCSOTW. Or by visiting our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Cool folks hanging out there talking about the show, submitting stories. really interesting, fun community, so you should give it a shot yourself. Kyle, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, I was just seeing this morning the Kickstarter launched for Project Rap Rabbit. That's the collaboration between the creators of Parappa the Rapper and games like Guitaru Man and Wendon and Elite Beat Agents. Those are two different people, if it wasn't clear from my phrasing there. And I'm going to get their names totally wrong in pronunciation here. Masaya Matsura and Keiichi Yano.
I think you nailed it.
All right.
Knocked it out of the park.
I apologize to any Japanese people still. But yeah, these are, I love these kind of rhythm games. You know, Parappa the Rapper is a legendary in, you know, I first played it on the PlayStation demo disc when it came out, and that was like the only game I had for a while. So I'd go through that Chop Chop Master Onion stage all over and over. Elite Beat Agents and Owendon, even though I don't know the language at all, I think that actually helped the game and that I just had the crazy visuals and tapping on the DS and some crazy rhythms. So I really want to be excited about this, but then I think about, you know, some of the other things that these guys have done. I don't know if you remember Major Minor's Majestic March on the Wii.
I never played that, no.
Yeah, you're a lucky man. It's it was kind of supposed to be like a marching band simulator, and you raise the baton up and down like the Wii remote. Oof. and it's so wonky.
No one said no to that. No one said, hey, guys, I don't think people want that.
Well, I mean, it's the creator of Parappa the Rapper. How do you say no? That's right. The thing.
Yeah, and everybody doubted Parappa the Rapper when it was. And what about Vib Ribbon?
Yeah, Vib Ribbon. That's an amazing game. I finally got to play it when it came back to the PlayStation Vita through a download. Yeah. The great thing about that is you could put in like any CD or MP3 later on and just play that track. It would try to generate the courses for you.
Awesome.
And just the look of it was great. So I'm trying to get hyped for this, but I'm trying not to get my expectations too high because, you know, with when the creators are this well known for great projects, you're kind of setting yourself up for a letdown almost. Yeah. I'm trying not to, but they just released some new details about it today. It's kind of like Parappa the Rapper style, except you get to choose how your responses to the opponent are going to be. You get to go with four different emotions, kind of like BioWare style, and that will choose what the lyrics are going to be for your response in true rap battle fashion.
I love it. And the concept art of the actual rap rabbit and his frog friend looked pretty cool. This certainly does seem like an actual Kickstarter, not the Kickstarters where it's like, we've already pretty much made it and we want to get some seed funding here to, you know, kind of shop it around to publishers. This really does look like we need money to start work on this.
Yeah, they need $1.1 million, which is going to be a lift. They have 50,000, I'm looking right now, but it's been less than a day so far. You know, hopefully that picks up because I'd like to see what they can do, even if I'm not 100% guaranteed that it's going to be great. You know, it's going to be interesting no matter what.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with you. I mean, I think Elite Beat Agents is one of my favorite DS games ever. And, you know, I love Parappa the Rapper and I love rhythm games in general. And these two guys getting together, teaming up like an Avengers super team to create a new thing. It sounds really cool.
Yeah. We had a long time where it was like the Guitar Heroes and, Karaoke Revolution and Rock Band were taking over that genre where it was just like you make music and that's it. And the story based ones, there was Parappa, there was Space Channel 5, Elite Beat Agents, you know, that it never really caught on much more than a niche, while the other ones just kind of skyrocketed and then plummeted to earth. Yeah. So it's nice to see someone continuing that niche, even if it's probably not going to be, you know, big time moneymaker.
What do you think about this, Christian? Are you excited for Project Rap Rabbit?
I hope it gets made. It's that genre of game has never, it never spoke to me for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because I was late to the PlayStation 2. Like I didn't get into rhythm games until I could have a big dumb plastic peripheral to hold on to for whatever reason. But I hope they get their funding. It looks like, again, I think the thing for Kickstarter is looking at the team behind it, the pedigree, and can they do it? I'm not sure if they're asking for enough money. Like I don't know if $1 million gets them to make this, like, is all the funding they need for this game. But it's certainly people that have made these games, can make these games, and likely will make this game. It's not like, hey guys, do you remember Parappa the Rapper? Well, now we're making an open world Star Wars RPG. And you're like, no, you're not.
Yeah, I think this is the kind of game that might not need that, you know, $50 million budget or whatever. Like the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter, you feel like that's going to be a drop in the bucket for what they're trying to do, and you know that's going to come out in 5 years or whatever. This seems it's a 2D game where you need to put a lot of work into the music and the art, but it's not going to be like you're creating an entire world and there's going to be a lot of debugging and artificial intelligence and stuff. It's more straightforward. So
it's
hopefully
not
that means
the Breath of the Wild of rhythm games.
No.
Right now,
you can avoid that feature creep, I hope.
Christian, how about you? What do you got for your story of the week?
Well, you mentioned it at the top of the show that the hype train is, you know, chugging. Right now, Sir Topham Hat is yelling at him, being like, watch out for Thomas. Hi, I have two young kids. And
I didn't get any of that yet. But
Really? You're not into Thomas the Tank Engine yet? I guess
no
not
way,
yet.
No way, dude. No.
I mean, you could still read your son a book, even though he might not be interested in it. That's how it came out.
I read him. We were reading through The Wizard of Oz right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah. He too will be afraid of witches and monkeys. it's Assassin's Creed. Assassin's Creed Origins has been the leaked title for a while.
Well,
now
Christian, let's do this first.
Yeah?
First one of the season.
I didn't know you had that ready. Nice.
What do you mean? Did I not have that ready? Come on. What's my name?
The guy who forgets to press record between segments sometimes.
Well, yes, that's true. I just wanted to give it its due, man. You can launch back into the story, but first one of the season. It's gearing up. We're stoking the
1 month away.
Yeah. Oh,
mind-boggling. Yeah.
I'm already tired. But go ahead.
I actually bought 4,000 public E3 tickets too, and I'm not going to share them. I'm just going to say I need at least 4,000 people's room of space around me at all times. Like I bought the floor space.
That would be a service that
we all thank you actually for making it less crowded.
It's Assassin's Creed. It's a prequel title. It's called Assassin's Creed Origins is the rumor. Also long rumored, like, gosh, probably 3 years. The first rumors of this started coming out that it's going to be set in Egypt. And that looks to be confirmed as well. And it's going to return the naval combat that everybody loved from Black Flag. And it looks like it's bringing back the idea of past and present. Whereas I think it's interesting because it's a merge of Black Flag, which kind of got rid of that. Like, you know, the larger story existed, but they were also like, we don't know where this story goes anymore. Here's a fun adventure. And now I'm curious as a prequel if they're going to try any attempt to retcon also, because the future or present of the Assassin's Creed series to me personally became such a mess. It seemed so cool in the first couple, and then it never lived up to that potential. And I think the interesting thing about a prequel is they have the opportunity to hopefully fix that stuff. Kyle, are you an Assassin's Creed guy? Does this excite you?
I played through some of the early ones, and it's been getting less and less interesting to me as they crank them out year after year, and it all seems to kind of run together. But I've always hated all the parts where it goes into the present or the future, whatever you call it. It just even in the early going, it never made any sense to me what was actually happening, and it just got worse as time went on. I think there's a perfectly serviceable thing you can do where it's just like there's this guild of assassins, and they, you know, exist in all these important time periods in history. And when you mix that in with this, it's all a simulation, and it's actually some guy who's a descendant who's going back and living their memories through DNA memory. But it's not really him. It's just a memory of him, and he can affect things, but it's not real. And I just,
when you put it like that, it sounds real dumb.
Yeah, when you put it accurately, when you describe it, there's no way not to make it dumb. It's dumb. I'm sorry.
Well, it's really cool if handled with the right everything is dumb, right? Like, you boil it down into a simple sentence. Great. Everything is dumb.
This is overwrought dumb. This is overcomplicated type of dumb.
I prefer everything is awesome. But that's just me. Go ahead.
Okay, Lego movie. What I meant though is that as you explain things that have like, some things don't need to be explained. I think Assassin's Creed ran into the same problem that Logan, the character, not the movie, and like Weapon X, and pretty much every comic that's ever existed runs into, where they're like, oh, we got to explain this crap that was just a cool thing. It's like, imagine if we were on like BioShock 8 and we had the origin of, oh God, what's the case?
You don't have to imagine, because you can just go see Alien Covenant if you want to be.
Is that really BioShock 8?
No,
it's like.
It's an example of what Christian is talking about.
Oh, I see.
We didn't need the origin of the aliens, guys. Mm. We didn't need to know where they come from.
Because first, before Would You Kindly, we actually went for 15 years of Would You Please. And here's the results of, and you're just like, who cares? Yeah. But I'm excited. I mean, I'm optimistic. And also Assassin's Creed, Jeff, bringing it back to the hype train, has some of the best E3 trailers and presentations of all time, in my opinion. Those things were epic.
Yeah. And you can certainly bet that Ubisoft will feature this iteration of Assassin's Creed front and center in their E3 festivities. I have never been a huge Assassin's Creed fan, but everything I had heard about this entry into the series made me think that maybe there was some hope for me. Maybe, you know, the fact that they took a year off and they were kind of going back to the drawing board, and a year ago when we heard them talking about the idea that, hey, it wasn't going to be such a prescribed narrative, it wasn't going to be so cutscene heavy and just forcing the player down a specific path. It really was going to be build your own narrative and much more sandboxy and much more honoring the player's decisions, et cetera, et cetera. I was like, okay, well, maybe this is really going to be a departure for what Assassin's Creed has become, and it's going to be that Breath of the Wild style, like complete reimagining of what this series means. This leak, while not very meaty in terms of content, you know, it's just a screenshot and some, you know, a couple sentences about what it's about, makes me feel a little less like that's going to happen. I don't want to read too much into a little bit of info. I will reserve judgment for when they actually announce it at E3, but it certainly doesn't seem like it's going to be that different from what we expect from an Assassin's Creed. And I know that will please a lot of people because Assassin's Creed is a very popular franchise. But for me, what I was really hoping for was for, you know, that like Breath of the Wild or, you know, Tomb Raider reboot or whatever, that thing that really makes you, or God of War, you know, when God of War was announced, it's like, oh my gosh, they really are looking at this franchise with fresh eyes, and it's a completely different take. But I don't think that's happening.
I will say that taking a year off can only help when you're cranking these games out every year, even if you're juggling the studios a little bit. There's really not much time to do anything except make the new environments and paste in the old gameplay.
Right. Yeah. No, and I was hoping maybe a year isn't enough to kind of really go back to the drawing board. You know, you need like 5 years, like a Zelda, you know, would take, or
yeah,
something like that. Of God of War. Right. Exactly. But well, we'll see. We'll see more at E3. And I'll hang on the caboose of the hype train for this one for a while, but hopefully I'll move up to the beverage cart. What?
you're not going to get past the dining cart?
No, that's where I hang out.
I like the way you hang onto the beverage cart in the dining cart.
That's the best part of E3 is the food, man. The free food.
No. This metaphor is going off the rails, guys.
Oh, nice.
We just entered Uncharted 2 territory. Hey.
Hey.
Wow. Okay, so my story of the week is that Payday 2 is getting a free VR mode. This was an announcement from Starbreeze Studio. Starbreeze, all in on VR, man. They have their own hardware. They're building their own headset, which actually a year ago E3, or was it 2 years ago E3? I think it was last year. I tried it. It did not impress me.
Heavy.
It was rough. But they're still working on it. They actually also announced that they're doing this thing called Storm, I guess, which is this installation-based VR project that they're working on using that headset, and it has like wider field of view than any of the others, and it's wireless, and it's one of those like amusement park go and pay money laser tag style, and you play this cool VR thing in this building, you know. So they're all in on VR, and as proof of that, their marquee title, Payday 2, is now getting this free update which is going to allow people to play the game, the full game. This is not a mode. This is not some series of mini games in the Payday universe. This is Payday 2, the entire full game that you can play in VR. They showed it on Vive. And even better than that, you can play with players who are not in VR. So it's completely seamless for you to play alongside other players. You're not partitioned off in your own little walled garden area where you have fewer people to queue for games with or whatever. You are in the ecosystem. You're just playing in VR and other people are playing however they want to play. It looks really, really cool. It's allowing for, you know, dual wielding and, you know, all of the cool VR stuff you would think where it's mapping your hands and you're moving around. I love this. I think this is indicative of what we're going to see over the next year, where more of these high profile projects are going to see the light of day. It's going to show people that you can play the kinds of games that you already love are going to be made better by being in VR. Or even if it's not better, it's equivalent and exciting in its own right. And I think we're going to see a huge amount of VR announcements and cool stuff at E3 this year. And Payday 2 is I think the first harbinger of that for me. Kyle, are you excited about this?
I'd like to be, but I'd like to be proven wrong about my lack of excitement. I feel like if a game is designed not for VR and you just try and say, oh, we're making the entire game now playable in VR, it's not an easy lift. There's so many things you have to change. Just getting around, for one, are you going to be going at the same speed that you were going in when you're just on a monitor? Because that sounds like a trip straight to Nausea City to me, especially for a game like Payday 2. If you said you're playing against people who are playing on their monitors on a regular computer against VR, I can't imagine that being very well balanced. If I just have to, you know, push the E key to lean out, where someone else has to actually, you know, take 2 seconds and lean their body, and then if they want to dodge back, they have to move back. That's not going to be a fair.
You've never seen me dodge, Kyle. You've never seen me dodge.
It's also might be like unfair. It might be unfair the other way around, because you can do things in VR that you could never do, like unhinging your head from your hands. So, you know,
right? I could walk through a wall in the game that there's no wall in real life. So, what are you going to do if my player walks into the wall? There's just a million different things you have to handle that were not designed for. The game was built years ago when VR was not even a thought.
Right.
They can change up a lot of stuff, and you know, some people have made conversions that actually work. One of my favorite games, Superhot VR, pretty much my favorite VR experience, and that was built in a way that they changed it up enough so that it worked in VR. The game itself was already kind of in universe of virtual reality thing, but they made it so that you don't really have to walk around as much. The enemies come at you. You're kind of just standing in one place rather than running around. So they obviously thought it out. If this sounds like they want the exact same experience as Payday 2 when you're playing on a keyboard and mouse, and unless they've really thought it through, I think it's going to be a letdown for some people.
So my thing reading the story, Jeff, and I'm not sure because I read it a couple of different places and just kind of skimmed through it. I think they're saying that maybe the entire game can be playable in VR, but I also feel like what they're touting mostly is this other big, it's not like a one-off like carnival game, but it's like a different mode that is a VR mode that people not in VR can also play. Like, I don't know, but the impression I got was that maybe there's something else that isn't the traditional, you know, super competitive Payday 2 version of the game. And instead, maybe it's like more like a GTA 5 heist, you know, like co-op, get some friends together, go play this thing, and it's tuned and balanced for VR. But then also, if you don't have a headset, don't worry, you can still get in and play this.
That's accurate. I mean, here's a direct quote of the article that I'm looking at. The developers also explained that it wouldn't be a small one-off experience. Instead, the entire game will be playable in VR.
Right. I think the entire game might also be playable, but it doesn't matter. We'll find out soon enough. I share Kyle's reservations for just traditional competitive Payday 2 in VR, but I like seeing more big games being brought to the experience, because that's always a good thing, you know, for the software or hardware.
Right. But Payday 2, you can also play just like cooperatively versus the computer, right? I mean, I haven't played it in a long, long time, but
You can do anything and everything in Payday 2, I feel like, at this point. That game is old. it's coming to Switch. The Switch can run Payday 2, right? Like, this game has been around for forever. It's tried and true.
It's kind of sprawling at this point. But even the single-player games, I worry that it's not going to be tuned to be real comfortable in VR. It's going to be, like, the same exact environments, the same exact graphics, but just moving around and you know, looking with your head rather than your mouse. It's if the game isn't built for it, it can cause a lot of problems.
Well, unsurprisingly, I'm looking at it the opposite way. I feel like it's a huge advantage to be in VR, but we'll see.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the Microsoft VR thing, to be perfectly honest. Like, their touch controllers were announced.
Yeah, they look really cool. Those, what they call them, the grip controllers? Is that what they were called?
Knuckles or something?
Yeah. It's like Sonic and Knuckles and... it looks really cool. I'm very excited for that too. Yeah, I think I really do. I mean, based on a bunch of meetings I already have set up for E3, there's a lot of really cool VR stuff that's going to be happening, and I think we're going to see some neat announcements. But let's talk a little bit about some other news stories. I think all of us kind of buried the lead because I think yesterday was revealed that Nintendo is continuing to make mobile games, and they're continuing to use their top-shelf IP to do so. Evidently, the next smartphone app that is coming out in the latter half of 2017 is Animal Crossing. But after that, we're getting a Legend of Zelda, guys. We're getting a Zelda for smartphones. Are we excited? There was a tepid response. Yeah.
I don't know. We just got a good Zelda on...
Yeah. Switch. Only it was portable, though. If it was portable...
Have you tried taking that Switch out of the dock?
What? Yeah,
you know, it's not attached in there.
Oh, my goodness.
No, mine's all scratched and bent. It's merged.
So it's not portable for you.
Not anymore, yeah.
Let me ask you this question. Let's approach it this way. First of all, it sounds like the excitement level is tame. But what kind of Zelda would you want to see on a smartphone?
Yeah, this is the thing. We know so little about this. When I picture Animal Crossing on a smartphone, I'm like, okay, it could be literally like the last 3DS version of Animal Crossing, just with, you know, touchscreen controls. You tap here, you build your thing, you talk to people. That's no big deal. For Zelda...
But wait. Let me just... Because I think Animal Crossing on a smartphone could be very dangerous. I mean, if you have an Animal Crossing that has notifications... Oh, that's terrible. If you have an Animal Crossing that, like, integrates with your email app somehow, and you're getting, like, actual emails from your little critters going, you haven't watered your plants in a while. What's going on?
So how about this? What if they go the Pokemon Go route and you need to go specific places in the real world to find items?
That could be a very real possibility.
That could be a very real, popular thing. So I'm excited about that. I could see how that would work, and that would be – that seems like a great property to take over. For Zelda – so let's assume you're doing like a 2D overhead, you know, Link to the Past or Link Between Worlds type thing. Are you going to use on-screen controls, you know, like a D-pad and buttons? I don't think it's going to be that, though. I don't think Nintendo has expressed interest in doing anything like that. So, you know, it's probably going to be, I don't know, something like with the Zelda IP. Is it going to be Super Mario Run style, really, where they dumb it down a lot to make it simple enough for like one or two taps, or maybe it's just, you know, like Zelda characters in you know, a gachapon game or something else that's guaranteed to make money. We know so little about this that it's really hard for me to say, oh, it's Zelda on your phone.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you're getting Breath of the Wild or anything close to
I
it.
Think
very unlikely, in fact.
Yeah, I think the least likely thing is that it's going to be a Zelda game as we know it. I think Nintendo is smart enough, at least they've shown that they're smart enough to understand that the way you do mobile is to do a mobile game and put your characters in it instead of keep putting the games your characters already do into a mobile environment. And I think they're smart enough to know that, and I think that's a positive thing. I mean, they've already shown – what was that Wii U Zelda game that was like Zelda Heroes or something weird where it's like, well, it's a Zelda game, but, you know, we made it – it's an action Dynasty Warriors-style thing.
All right.
They're not
Hyrule
precious.
Warriors.
Hyrule Warriors. Well done. Yeah, they're not precious about this stuff. And I think you're going to find that it's a very different kind of game that just happens to star Link and Ganon and Zelda.
Yeah, I think that you can run into a problem with the marketplace with that, though. When, like, in Super Mario Run's case, people are like, oh, Mario on my phone, I like that. And then they play it, and it's you know, you can't go backwards, and it's only very short levels, and you're going for high scores rather than exploration.
Right.
And, you know, it's still doing okay. It's like a top 200 app months later, but it's not Pokemon Go or anything like that. So I think a lot of people are going to look at it because it's Zelda and be really interested, but they have to do it in a way that's going to keep that interest. And, you know, Nintendo has a very hit or miss track record as far as mobile conversions so far.
Yeah, I mean, that's my question to you guys. And Jeff, I'll start with you because I think I might know the answer. I feel like Zelda, to me, is the IP doesn't mean as much as the quality of game I'm going to get, like the adventure game. When someone says Zelda, I'm picturing a certain type of game, and I know it's going to be quality because it's a marquee Nintendo franchise. To me, the Zelda IP, I'm not going to buy, like I didn't buy Hyrule Warriors. I wasn't super excited about Soul Calibur 2 with Link because that's not what was bringing me to Soul Calibur. I know maybe some people were, but Mike, Jeff, like, are you enamored enough by the IP that you'll play a Fire Emblem game if it's Link in it, or if it's like Link pinball or something like that? Like, is the name enough to get you to play another type of game? Or
I think you're absolutely right. But I do think the fact that they are willing to put that IP on something indicates that they're confident with a level of quality. Hyrule Warriors, I think, maybe might be the exception to that. I don't know. I didn't play a lot of that game, but I heard it was actually pretty decent. What I'm hoping for is, I think it would be really cool if they did some sort of like turn-based Zelda on mobile, something that really works on a mobile platform, you know, that I don't have to be hunkered over playing this and miss my stop on the bus or whatever because I don't have any time to pause. I think something really different and really interesting could be done, and it could still be really high quality and feel like a Zelda in a certain sense, but be a departure for the franchise. I think that's an interesting opportunity for them.
I would play Link Pinball, but mainly because I love Nintendo's pinball games in general. Metroid Prime Pinball, Kirby's Pinball Land. They've done some good one-off conversions like that in the past. So, but I don't think that's what they're going to be doing. I think people would feel kind of betrayed by that. So I think it's going to be something along the lines of a Zelda adventure. But it's going to be hard. Like a turn-based battle system, that's very different for Zelda. That's not what people come in expecting, and might be a heavy lift to
get them to accept. Yeah, but I mean, like a Tomb Raider or a Lara Croft Go or a Hitman Go or something, you know, like those.
Oh, that would be cool.
Those things are cool and they work. And, you know, I think a Zelda where they conform.
They can't call it Zelda Go, though. They've already ruined the – their Go means something different than than Hitman's Go.
That's true.
Yeah, quite a bit.
That's true. Let's talk a little bit about Mass Effect. We got a couple of news stories this week about BioWare. It sounds like the Mass Effect Andromeda release and how rocky it was and how – I mean, I'm sure it sold very well, but it sounds like Mass Effect is going to go bye-bye for a little while. And there has been some restructuring at BioWare Montreal, the studio behind Mass Effect. And there is a report in Kotaku saying that they are scaling down the Mass Effect franchise and it's going on hiatus for a little while. In parallel to that, another news story says, based on the financial call that EA CEO Andrew Wilson made to investors, said that BioWare's next game release has been delayed a little bit. It was set to come out in the fiscal quarter that ended in March of 2018, and now it will be in the fiscal quarter that ends in April of 2019, or March, 2019. So it seems pretty likely that it's a fall release 2018 at the earliest. But the more interesting point is that this new BioWare game isn't Dragon Age, and it isn't Mass Effect. It is a new IP, an IP that they've been working on since 2012, and that is a action RPG and will be a live service. So a live service is something along the lines of The Division or Destiny. It's these games that are online perpetual worlds that you jump into and jump out of. So it sounds like BioWare is kind of scaling back the RPG stuff that we know of them and creating a new IP, letting Mass Effect rest for a while, and creating something brand new. And Kyle, I'm wondering what your take on this is.
I don't think it's a bad idea for them, actually. Going back into Mass Effect after Mass Effect 3 always seemed kind of, not necessarily foolhardy, but very difficult to me. First of all, the way the ending to Mass Effect 3 was received, and then how they had to actually redo it a few months later because of the fan outcry, should tell you a little bit about where that series was at that point. And now, then continuing it, this has been the first Mass Effect without the two doctors who co-founded BioWare, whose names I can never pronounce correctly. They left and have left kind of their protege who worked on the Mass Effect games to lead things off. And, you know, it led to a lot of changes. Mass Effect Andromeda, I feel, tried to do too much. It had to kind of reset the story by going to a new place with new characters, and also kind of changed up the action of the gameplay. There's more platforming in some places. There's more resource management type things going on, and it just came off a little jumbled. So I think taking a break from that IP, I think ending it at 3 would have been okay. It had its own fine story arc, and you know, focusing on something new is a good way to get the juices flowing. You're not tied to all the baggage that's come from these, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours of Mass Effect or Dragon Age or whatnot. And you can, if you're looking to try out new things, especially, you know, a games as a service type thing, which seems to be where all the developers are going, where all the money is these days, having a new IP is definitely a good way to do that. So I think it's a smart move, even if in the short term it means less content cranking out for us in the coming months.
In the chat room, Could432 says BioWare making a Destiny style game is sad. Do you agree, Christian?
No, I mean not entirely. It's the thing where you want the company to keep making the thing that you love. You want them to keep making that thing because you love that thing. But if they keep making that thing, then everyone's like, it's just still that same thing. It's like, you know, it's like saying
that Andromeda, I think the strengths of Andromeda are in its action combat, which I would never have said for the previous Mass Effects. I think the things that it does best for my money is what would work best in a Destiny style game.
So I want to get back to the Kud's point, but to ask your question though, is that what it does it do that well, or is that what it does best? Because those are two very different statements, and I would say it's what it does best.
Yeah, I mean it.
Disappoint.
Yeah, I mean it's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah,
but that's also different than it being good.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful that they can bring to bear, you know, such a level of artistry that and there's a new IP, they would want to, you know, put their flag in the ground. I'm hopeful that it is really a cool game and an interesting idea that kind of feels fresh and different for them.
Right, because that's what we want, right? That's what we were just saying about Assassin's Creed. So to Could432's point, I understand, and the easy reaction is like, yeah, I agree. But read that sentence where it says, Nintendo making a Fallout 4, Oblivion-style game with Zelda is sad. And I feel like Morrowind and Fallout already, you know, did that sort of thing and filled that marketplace. Nintendo shouldn't go open world. And then Nintendo not only went open world, they opened up open world. So, like, the idea of someone coming into this area with a fresh perspective, and they've made quality games in the past, I think that's more exciting to me than if they announced Mass Effect Andromeda 2. Like that, I would be like, nope.
Right.
This is what gamers always want. We want something that's familiar and also something like nothing we've ever seen. We want it to be comfortable and something that we're used to, and also innovative and never before seen.
Man, we are real a-holes.
We're awful. Gamers are the worst.
Basically, Kai, what I heard you say is that we're already naming Red Dead 2 and God of War Reboot as our games of the year.
Oh, yeah, totally. Game of the show.
All right. On that note, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Squarespace. If you're looking to make your next move, you should make your next move with Squarespace. If your next move is a website, you're likely to need something that is easy, that is convenient, that's not going to crash. If you're making your next move in any in any field, it's pretty likely that you're going to need a website, and you want your website to be awesome. Squarespace allows you to do that quickly, easily, and not have to think about it too much. You don't have to worry about figuring out how to program in HTML. You don't have to do a whole lot of stuff. All you got to do is log on to squarespace.com/DLC. Then you start making it, and you start making it with a template they have already got for you. They got dozens and dozens of these things. They're professionally designed. They're gorgeous. And then you can start messing with it. You can drag and drop things, move stuff around. It's all visual. It's all what you see is what you get. You just click here, click there, create the site you want. Make your next move look great. Make it unique. Make it not look like every other site on the internet, but not look bad. Not make people go, oof, I don't want to come here. These are the people that have been doing this the longest. I honestly have been using Squarespace for about a decade now, which is insane. Jeff Cannata is built and housed on Squarespace. These, they make it so easy to update your website. They make it so easy to create something great. And if you have any problems, they have 24/7 customer support. They got unique domains that come with a year's service. And you can build your site without having to give them a credit card. You can make sure you like it before you ever even have the option to pay them. And then once you do like it, all you got to do is use our promo code, which is Jeff Sent Me, J-E-F-F-S-E-N-T-M-E, and you'll get 10% off. That's pretty cool. You'll show your support for this show, which is also cool. So go to squarespace.com/DLC, build your website, make your next move, make it look great and beautiful, and use that promo code Jeff Sent Me for 10% off. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Kyle, what is on your playlist? What have you been playing?
Oh, I've got a ton of stuff that I've been getting into lightly, but not too deeply. Mm-hmm. I guess I've been playing a bit of Tumbleseed on the Switch. I don't know if you guys have tried this yet.
Oh, yeah. This is that crazy... it's like based on those old physical games where you have a marble on two little metal rods and you're just leaning it back and forth trying to put it into a hole, right?
Yeah, well, it's based on a game called Ice Cold Beer, which is called a very occult game. There's nothing else like it over it. And yeah, you have a bar that's going across the table, a vertical table, and you can raise each side with joysticks, and the marble kind of tilts. So that's how you go. You have to go left and right by going up and down almost. And you have to avoid most of the holes and go in the lit up ones. Tumbleseed extends this onto the Switch with a whole lot of extra stuff. You can get crystals and put down, you know, flags for your checkpoints, or get weapons to attack other things. There's things to avoid besides the holes, and I'm really trying to get into it, but I feel like it's just a little bit too hard for its own good.
People were saying it's like the Dark Souls of dexterity marble games.
of all those games, it's definitely the hardest. But it's the controls were maybe a little too sluggish, or I don't know, because you'll end up tilting too far to one side, and then when you try and go back, by that time you've slid, you know, a few, like half the screen to the right, and you probably bumped into something, and so it requires a lot of really fine control. And I keep failing at it, and yet I keep coming back to try it. The last time I felt like this was with Spelunky, which is a great, very difficult generated platform game, and I've only beaten that game like twice, but I've played it thousands of times, and I feel like Tumbleseed might be another one of those. If I can just get over this hump and learn how to, you know, do lateral movement with just up and down on the sides, then I feel like I'll really get into it.
That's high praise comparing it to Spelunky. I mean, that's a major game.
Yeah, I don't want to go that far yet, because I might not get over that hump, and I might just say forget it. I'm never playing this again.
But there's there's actually a bar in LA. I don't know, Christian, if you've ever been to it, but there's a bar in LA that has ice cold beer. And for a buddy of mine's bachelor party, we went, and it was like one of those retro arcade places. They have Street Fighter and NBA Jam and everything. And they had ice cold beer. And, you know, we played a bunch of the old stand-up arcade games from our youth that we loved. But we kept coming back to ice cold beer, this very simple, extraordinarily frustrating little dexterity game where you're moving these rods and trying to get the ball to go in the stupid hole. Oh, no, no, no. But, it, I mean, I wonder if the fact that this is digital is even rougher, because at least with a physical marble on physical rods and physical holes, you're not going to be like, screw you, physics, you know? But with a digital version of it, you can.
You are. I mean, I know there's a large number of people, they don't live near me, but they really hate physics and other sciences.
That's a good point. But I mean, I feel like sometimes you can feel that a game is being, like you said, oh, it feels, the controls are feel a little slidey and stuff. It's like, even if it's a complete one-to-one perfect translation of what would happen in the real world, it just because it's digital, you can go, ah, this is not fair. I'm better than this.
Yeah, you have a more intuitive sense of how the marble is going to move, because it's a real object and you've lived in the real world forever. It's kind of like playing a pinball table versus a digital pinball table, where even if they get the physics down, you know, perfectly, you still can't feel it under your hand. You can't shake it, and you don't. It's a little too pre-programmed in a way. You don't get those random vagaries of hitting something in just the right way.
Right.
You can't model it at that level.
And even just the physical gyro challenges in Breath of the Wild have me like wanting to throw my Switch across the room. So I think Tumblesea would pretty much be the worst game for me to play.
When I heard people talking about this game, like ice cold beer, like the tabletop or arcade game, I'd never seen it. I don't know what bar that is, Jeff, but I haven't seen it. And people were comparing, it's like ice cold beer, and all my only frame of reference for that was like a baseball game, was like ice cold, and I was like, what? I was like, how? I had no, and I watched videos like, I don't see this at all. And then you Google ice cold beer, and it's not, you know, usually the first page of results. It's like, you got to be like ice cold beer arcade. I was just like, it was like Coors Light, and I was just like, I don't get it.
Yeah, they have at MAGFest, which is a local East Coast arcade show, classic game show that they have here. They always have ice cold beer tournaments, and it always gathers, you know, people dozens and dozens deep, just try and crane their heads and get a look, because it's such a unique game, and that physical aspect to it really attracts people that might not be as interested in some of this other stuff.
So what else is on your playlist?
It's funny, I've been getting back into Tetris for the NES, of all things.
Wow, are you playing it on an NES?
Yes, it's actually on an analog NT that I've been testing out. But yeah, it's on an old cathode ray tube monitor. So I was on YouTube, and it recommended me some tournaments that they do for the classic NES Tetris. People still run tournaments on that version of the game, because that's the one they remember, I guess. And these people have gotten really good. They can max out the score to 6 nines. Now, Jesus. Which the first person to do that was just a few years ago. People have been getting better and better at the game. NES Tetris is kind of different, because it has a kill screen. When you get to like 230 lines, I think it actually gets so fast that you cannot get the pieces all the way over to the left or right anymore. So you're pretty much dead in a few pieces. So what that means is that you have to max out your score, you have to get as many Tetrises as possible early on without getting, you know, those one line or two line clears. So you're really pushing if when you want to get a high score, you're really pushing the edge of that risk reward factor. You want to clear space, but you don't want to clear space because that lowers your maximum score.
I love the fact that like in 87 or whenever this was when this came out, the designers were like, well, we don't have to worry about this because human beings will never be able to deal with it when it's this fast. So
I have no idea if they even tested to that point. I'd love to go back to the developers and say, did you really think people would be playing this to this level? And I'm guessing they would say no.
Yeah.
So I saw these people, and they make it look so easy. They start at level 18, which is one of the highest levels you can start on. And they're just getting Tetris after Tetris. And, you know, when you watch them, you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That piece goes there. That piece goes there. You think that you're willing them into position. But no, there's people controlling it there. You're like, oh, yeah, I could do that. It's like watching someone play a really high-level Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah, they're just hitting. That's up, left. Okay, I know those. I know four directions. And then you try it, and you can't do it. So I've been going back. It's still just as zen and soothing as it was, you know, when I was in second grade playing it for the first time. You know, I'll put on a podcast and I'll have Tetris going, and I don't really have to engage that part of my mind that processes language, and I can just zen out and listen to a good story and try and beat my high score. And I'm not ready for tournaments yet, but it's just really relaxing.
My position is Tetris is objectively the greatest video game ever made.
It's hard to argue. I don't know what you could put against it that's as instantly accessible to as many people.
In 100 years, people will still be playing Tetris, and they'll still be playing it the exact same way it was always played. There's not going to be a new version of Zelda that, you know, it's Tetris is Tetris, and it's one of the greatest things ever created.
Yeah, well, they do keep tweaking Tetris. Some of the later versions. I don't know if you've seen Tetris the Grandmaster, which they've shown off on some of the Awesome Games Done Quick runs. It's an arcade version that was only made in Japan, where people apparently get very serious about their Tetris. And it has a mode where called the Grandmaster mode, where you have to get 999 lines, and that's just like the first step at the highest speed, where you know blocks are literally hitting the bottom in one pixel, and then you have to kind of just slide them over. And then things get invisible. You can't see the blocks in the bottom anymore. You just have to remember where everything is. And then the credits start rolling over top of that too, just to get in your way. And
somebody jingles his keys in your face.
Your friend comes down and starts punching you in the crotch. Credit card swipes your bottom.
They release some hounds to chase you.
They suck all the oxygen out of the room. yeah, it gets insane. You should find some of the streams of people playing this. And so, Tetris is there's a lot of ways to vary it and make it insane.
I love that the first two games that you mentioned on your playlist are literally things that drive people insane.
What can I say? That's my aesthetic, I guess.
I love it. Anything else you want to talk about?
I could mention I've been, you know, tinkering with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe a little bit. Just getting back. I played it on the Wii U, and you know, it's just an excuse. 200cc mode. I never really mastered it on the Wii U, but then if I can just play it in bed and keep trying again and again. It's weird having to use the brakes in Mario Kart 8. That's something that you really need to get used to in 200cc mode, and it's a nice change of pace. It brings back like the challenge that I felt when Mario Kart was new, I think. And I've been playing Swap Sword on iOS. Mm. It's a little match 3 game, but it's a little more in depth than that. You're matching things to get armor or coins or magical spell abilities, and you also have a little character on the screen that you can move instead of moving the rest of the screen, and you have to get him to the door that you open up with keys on each level. You also have to avoid the enemies that are moving towards you every turn, and you can match the enemies up to destroy them. If you match 3 in a row of them, they just go away, or if they're standing right next to you, you can move through them and kind of slash them. That was a weird overwrought description of
No, it looks cool. It's the first time I've heard of it, so I just kind of googled it, and
it's like Bejeweled mixed with turn-based Zelda, really.
Yeah, it's cool. It's got a cool like 16-bit aesthetic.
If you like match 3 games but you want something a little bit more than Candy Crush, I'd definitely recommend it.
It's called Swap Sword.
That's right.
Let's talk about Prey. You've been playing Prey as well, right? You just starting to dig into that?
Yeah, I've got into Prey. I'm liking it. I feel like the combat is actually my least favorite part of the game. I feel like I'm underpowered all the time, which is nice. It increases the tension. But more than that, when I feel like it's hard to feel when you've gotten in a good hit on the enemies or when you're getting hit, the interface really doesn't make that impact enough for me. So it's
what are you playing on, Kyle?
I'm playing it on the PC.
Okay, good, good. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so, you know, and also, you know, I worry about my ammo constantly, and but I don't want to go in with a wrench because that's just like you instantly get hit as soon as you get close to these things. It's like the opposite of Doom from the same studio, or the same publisher, I guess, where, you know, you felt like a super badass and you could really master everything, and you were just running around the room and you could avoid everything, and really just planning out your next few seconds. Where's the alley that you can get through? Where's the safety? And in Prey, there's just like, you see an enemy and you're like, oh crap, I know I'm going to take damage here.
Doom is so good. You made me want to go play some more. It's so good. What about
let's go back to
so good.
It's but, so you know, I love Prey for the environmental storytelling and the atmosphere, but it's just the baseline game loop interactions really didn't wow me.
I did a whole thing on my other gaming show on Anchor, Newest, Latest, Best. I talked about the idea that I think Prey would be so much better if somebody sent in a voicemail to the show and talked about if it was Prey Home Alone Edition, if you were just like trying, instead of having guns at all or feeling the need to take down these enemies in the ways that the game seems obliged to have because it's in the first person perspective, that if it really was just about that environmental storytelling and exploration and all that stuff is so fun and like figuring out how to get through locked areas or, you know, discovering the code to get into a safe. All of that stuff I'm completely hooked on. And every time, you know, every 15 seconds and the game feels it's this weird ADD need to give me something to smack, I'll like just take a breath, game, and just let me handle things in a more interesting way. I think the goo cannon, this weapon that you get in the game that lets you, you know, freeze stuff in place by shooting them with this goo stuff, or, you know, you can actually use it to traverse levels too. You can create little platforms out of it. It's a brilliant idea, but it is, I think, completely marginalized by the fact that ultimately, even when you goo them, they come ungooed. Mm-hmm. And
I could listen to you say goo all day. It's so, you know, like this eloquent description of like the environment. You're like in the problems and the puzzles, and it's just so much fun. And then the goo cannon.
It's a goo cannon. It's got a lot of goo. I'm very, very frustrated by how much awesome is trapped underneath a level of tedium that only feels like it's there because they made a first-person game. It's
you
like,
got to break the goo off. Someone put goo over the game, and that's where the good stuff's trapped.
All stall into the goo.
So I've read that if you lower it down to easy mode, that it's actually much more tolerable. You can just kind of blaze through some of the encounters. So, but I gave up. I always feel weird doing that. Like, oh, I'm a hardcore gamer. I should be able to do this on extreme mode, but I'm on normal now, and I might just go down to easy because
The problem is they call it normal. You know, it's like, this is normal. I'm like, well,
I want to be below normal.
Yeah, I'm not subnormal over here, you know?
I don't know. I mean, when they were making Ninja Masters and Zero came out, no one had a problem being sub-zero. And
that was a real we went so far to get there, Christian. That was so far.
I could tell what was coming. Thank you.
I think different games are different, though, and that's interesting about difficulty, right? Where Halo came out with this idea of, this is how we meant you, like 343 or Bungie at the time. This is how the game was intended to be played, heroic or whatever difficulty it is. But then to Kyle's point of Doom, where I think I did my first playthrough on normal, but then I played it on hard, and while I never beat the game that way, it was like, oh yeah, now here's a symphony. Like, this is just a symphony of destruction, and you see how the game bends itself to be super enjoyable that way. But then something like Prey, or I think even like Uncharted 3, which has a mess of combat toward the back half of the game, like playing that game on easy, perfect, absolutely perfect. It's just like, but we have in our head like normal is normal, but not every game's normal is the best way to play the game. I would love to see like Uncharted 3 if they update it and it's like easy, how the game was meant to be played.
Yeah, you're always looking to be on that edge of not too easy and not too hard. Raf Koster has a book, The Theory of Fun for Game Design, that really dives deep into where you just want to ride that edge between challenging So there's it's engaging you, but if it goes too far over that line, then you're just stuck. And if it goes too far below that line, then you're like playing with a baby's toy. And it's a very small window for truly engaging gameplay.
And it's not constant across all people, right? I mean,
no, that's the problem.
There's a heck of a lot of people who are like, no, Prey is awesome because I'm having to deal with these enemies all the time. And I'm just like, oof, it's not fun for me. I don't like the idea. You know, people are like, oh, you can grab a turret and bring it with you and set it down. It's like, well, that just sounds like tedium. That doesn't, yeah. I don't feel smart because I figured out that I can bring a turret with me. I don't know. I want, you know, there's a sequence in the game where you like go into zero G for the first time and you have to go down this long corridor in zero G in order to get to a previously unreachable part of the space station. And it's awesome. It's like, oh, I'm in zero G and I've earned it. I had to upgrade my suit in order to get here and I'm going through it. And then it's like, oh no, there's new enemies here that'll just kill you. And it's like, why? There's nothing fun about that. I'm like floating through zero G, gloriously enjoying the environment. You have to ruin it by putting this stupid thing that I now have to, I don't know. It's stupid.
It'd be cool if there was like old Doom style. You could just, enter a code in the terminal and then be God mode and just explore or even clip through the walls. Cause that's really all I want to do at this point in the game is just see the rest of the space station and hear the story.
And it's not like I don't want challenge or enemies in my games. I enjoy games that have them, but I guess the way you deal with the enemies, the inherent combat loop, I just find to be not very fun.
Yeah.
Christian, what's on
something fun?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what's on your
Oh man, Forza Horizon 3, the Hot Wheels DLC expansion came out. 9 out of 10 times I will tell you never buy a season pass. Forza Horizon 3, if you have the game and don't have either expansion Blizzard Mountain or Hot Wheels, buy the season pass, save those couple of bucks. This thing is incredible. I wish I was playing it right now. I love doing this show, but I wish I was playing it right now. Jeff, do you remember way back when we did the video Newest, Latest, Best and we unboxed your Xbox One?
Yeah.
And you remember how awesome it was when we opened it up, you plug it in and it immediately starts with like this cool kind of like hype video?
Yeah.
Man, Playground Games, the people behind the Forza Horizon series, both Blizzard Mountain and now with the Hot Wheels thing, you load up this expansion right when you boot into it. It starts with the most epic race and was just like paired to perfect music and you're just blitzing around on this realistic, you know, life-sized Hot Wheels track suspended over islands with like a beautiful sunset beach vista in the background, and you're just rip-roaring around, and the track, it looks like how you would expect a Hot Wheels track to do. It's like, you know, that neon orange.
It's got loop-de-loops?
It's got loop-de-loops. It's got the zoom, like the zoom pads that you hit to give you that, you know, like where the, it's like, and it looks at like the toys, but life-sized and real, like how it would need to look to actually accelerate a car.
Do they look like they're made out of plastic, or do they look like they're made, like they were magically, you know, like Indian in the cupboard style turned into a real boy?
No, it looks like it's this plastic track, but it has a weight behind it that you could imagine it supporting, you know, real cars. Like the art direction or the subtle changes they made to these things to make it look like it could exist in the real world, quote unquote, but still be totally representative of these iconic toy line is amazing. It is that first race, that first experience, and you hit these huge jumps and it does like the, you know, you've seen it a million times in Red Bull videos or GoPro videos where it's like goes into slow motion for a little bit and then you land and you get right back onto a launch pad. You just keep rip roaring through. It's so good. My question, or I think Kyle, maybe you can talk about this some, but I think it's interesting now that Forza Horizon 3 is doing loops, and man, God bless that engine to be able to handle this. And who knew? Who knew? But I think it's interesting because I love the courses in Mario Kart 8, and I think they're brilliantly designed. I think they're tons of fun to play. But as you play them, oftentimes it feels like you're on flat ground, even though if you look at the course, there's quite a few loops. You're kind of going vertical, you know, when your wheels turn to be magnetic or whatever. And I feel like with Forza Horizon 3, when you're on a loop, it feels more like you're driving upside down or like you're leaning sideways. And I think it's interesting comparing the balance of how you convey oh crap, you're upside down, or oh crap, you're 90 degree angle, but then also still being able to steer and control yourself. Do you feel that way in Mario Kart, or am I alone in that?
No, I see what you're saying. I think when you're hovering, I think the problem is, or maybe not as a problem, but the camera really follows the track with you. So if the track is twisting, the camera twists in exactly the same time. So it makes it feel flat. You see the ground is the ground, even if from a third person view, you would see yourself going upside down. And I think that's good for making the game comprehensible and controllable. But I would guess in Forza Horizon 3, and I'd have to look at the video a little bit. I haven't played it in a little bit. I'm guessing the camera maybe has a little bit of lag to it, so that when you're on a loop, the camera is still where you were, half a second ago. So that makes it apparent that you're changing angle or tilt.
And it's just that little bit, and it's prevalent on no matter what, if you're inside the car, on the hood, or on a trail camera. And to me, the way it makes it feel like you're on an actual roller coaster, like there's that momentum of like, here we go, and then you start going, and then your body catches up with you, and you're like, we're going!
Yeah, I feel like Trackmania is another game that I feel like did that really well with. The course design is like, the user-made courses have become literal roller coasters. Some of them you just hold the up key and go through the course in the craziest ways possible. But the way the camera works with that too, it really makes you feel like when you're riding on a wall, you won't fall off that wall, but it feels like you're 90 degrees to the ground.
Yeah, it's the same game, Jeff. It's not gonna. There's still not burnout. There's no crash mode. But it's this environment is beautiful.
How much do I have to pay for a DLC that's called Forza Horizon 3 Burnout?
Well, it's whatever it is, $15, and it's that crash mode minigame that hopefully is good from that other developer, right?
Yeah.
This Forza Horizon 3, I will say right now, to me, is my favorite racing game ever made, and these two DLC expansions are just lights out. It's incredible. If you maybe skip Blizzard Mountain and you have the game and you enjoyed the game, give this thing a try. It is phenomenal, and the creativity put into these courses and being able to take cars that have slipperier tires and just kind of drift around between it, or you can go put some race tires on and just be glued to the track as you do a loop or a corkscrew and come off this huge jump. It's stunning. It's absolutely amazing and well worth the price of the $20 cost of entry or whatever it is.
I wanted to highlight a comment here in the chat room after we moved off of the Prey discussion. Could 432 wrote that he's been playing Prey on hard, and he said the enemy encounters are occasionally fun, but they are mostly tedious. He says most of my time is spent just carrying turrets from place to place. And, I respect him for doing that, but...
You earned that achievement.
Yeah.
Most of my time was spent putting the disc back in the envelope and sending it back to Gamefly. And then playing Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels.
Yeah, ain't nobody got time for that. That's what I think. Ain't nobody got time for that. I don't know. My biggest problem, guys, is that I have a legitimate addiction to Heroes of the Storm. I mean, I'm legitimately addicted to it.
I thought you were going to roll into an ad read. I thought I was going to be like, my armpits stink.
You know, my problem
armpit
is
air.
My mattress isn't comfortable.
Yeah, I can't get a good night's sleep. It does sound like something I would do. But in this case, nobody wants to hear me talk about Heroes of the Storm. But
no, I want to hear your two-point addiction.
I legitimately, every time I start, I sit down and play Prey for an hour. And I'm like, I'm going to power through this game. I'm going to finish it. I want to see what the story, how it wraps up. And then I'm like, I want to play Heroes of the Storm. That's all I want to do. And the 2.0 update is so good. And there's always something to give me a little pleasure center tickle. There's always a little loot box to unlock or some bit of thing. There's no wasted time. You're not ever unrewarded for the moments you spend in it. As frustrated as I get for losses in ranked which is a very, fresh user base now of people who don't understand how to
play. It's all us annoying Overwatch nerds, because there's ads all the time that are like, hey, play this other game you don't really care about, but you'll get sweet stuff for the game you do. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of people like that. I don't know why those people have to go play ranked mode, But
they're always on your team.
Always on my team.
You don't see those ads? It was play with Jeff Cannata. You get an extra loot box.
But I want to – okay, so I want to highlight one specific thing that, you know, I talk about this a lot, I guess, but this morning before I played, because I have an addiction. I literally have, like, if I have a half an hour available, I'm like, I can get a game in. I know I can get a game in. So this morning I played a match, and I played ranked, and I ended up having to be the healer, right? Which is never good. I mean, it's not terrible. I'm a really good healer, but you'd have much smaller effect on the outcome of the game as the healer. You can't really carry as well. So I try not to be the healer because I want to affect my team in a more significant way. But I ended up playing a character named Brightwing, who is this little dragon, and one of her abilities is polymorph. You can turn a character into a sheep for a couple of seconds. It's very powerful. And
Diablo sheep?
Sure.
Warcraft.
It's a Warcraft character.
Is it Warcraft sheep? I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. And the other team has a character named ETC, the what is it? Extreme Tauren Chieftain. He's this like rock and roll character. It's actually a comedy character that Blizzard made up at BlizzCon one year. And he plays rock and roll. He's like, that's his thing. And one of his super moves, one of his ultimate abilities, is he does this thing called Mosh Pit, where he starts playing music and anybody caught in this wide radius is stunned and dances to his music for a full 4 seconds. It's very powerful. It's one of the most powerful ults in the game. And it often results, if a player can pull it off and do it right, it often results in a lot of kills because everybody is stunned and your team can just wail on all the people that are caught in that mosh pit. So we were playing a game this morning and my team was just owning, and we were really rolling them. But this ETC character on the other team really thought he was going to turn the tide with his mosh pit. And when you start playing, when you start activating mosh pit, there's like a the sound of the band warming up. It's like tick, 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 bang. You know? So you kind of get a little bit of a warning. So he like slides in, he power slides into our group of our team, and he starts up his thing. And I, because I know the game and I know that's what his ability is, I've been waiting for him to do that, Christian. I've been waiting for that moment. And I've been making sure that my polymorph ability is off of cooldown and not using it until after he uses his ult. Because the second he slid into our team and striked up his band, I polymorphed him and he got deleted immediately. And that is one of the greatest experiences, one of the greatest feelings, to know that another human being on another computer somewhere else in the world thought they were going to be awesome and you absolutely denied them based on your knowledge of what they were going to do. That is exactly the plan that they had, and you knew exactly how to circumvent it, and your skill trumped their skill because you pulled off that move in the exact like half of a second moment that you had to in order to do that. And it is exactly why I'm addicted to these games, because there's nothing like that in a single player game.
So I've had a similar level of addiction for months now to Hearthstone, which another Blizzard property. So I guess they really know what they're doing with this. But I finally broke it. I finally deleted it from my iPad.
Oh.
To make room for other stuff, because I played a month of the new expansion and I really liked it. But I found the same way as you. I'd like, oh, I want to try out these new games. I want to, you know, be conversant about what's going on in the world and instead, or in the world of games. And instead, I end up playing Hearthstone for, you know, I'll play three games over an hour or whatever. And I feel like it was getting in the way of me being well-rounded enough to, you know what's going on. So I've deleted it, haven't looked back, but I still watch people on YouTube playing is my way of kind of my methadone to get off of the Hearthstone addiction. Because these players... Yeah, exactly. Because you still get the same kind of thrill of watching them play. You have a rooting interest. It's almost like watching sports rather than playing them, I guess, when they always condense down, you know, they have the best moments, the best games, and they cut out a lot of the wasted time when you're waiting for the opponent has like a minute and a half to take their turn, and where we literally can't do anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, you either have a TV show on in the background, but or something. But on YouTube, they will often just cut that down, so you really get a game in less of the time.
So you're saying I have to delete the game. That's the only way.
I'll probably go back when the next expansion comes out. But I'm trying not to. I'm trying to limit my exposure. I still have it on my PC, so if I want to play there. But when it's on your iPad, it's really just always accessible, and that's the dangerous part.
Joe Blank in the chat room said, in Overwatch, I blocked a Roadhog hook with a May ice wall. Felt exactly the same way you're describing, Jeff. So,
nice.
Yeah. Those things, it only feels awesome, in my opinion, because it's another human being on the other end of it. It really does. All right.
If only there was like a webcam, you could get their reaction.
Oh, I know.
Live.
Weren't they like talking about that in the old days with when Xbox had first came out with their webcam? It was like you're going to have these crazy reactions when you take down somebody or do something in a video game. There's going to be like a snapshot. Was there a game that did? Was it Burnout that did that?
Yeah, it would capture off of the Xbox Live cam.
Yeah.
Like
when you did a takedown, you got like a 2 second little video of somebody going
that went south quick because
anyway,
people are garbage.
I remember seeing a lot of shirtless people when I was playing Uno.
Yeah.
That's not good. Yeah. All right, we're running long. Let's get I want to talk a little VR just real quick. So let's get to some VR talk. Now, based on your discussion, Kyle, of Tumbleseed and Tetris, I suspect that I see here that both of us have been playing Polybius on PlayStation VR. I suspect you're going to like it more than I did.
I need to play it a little more. I've played it just for a few sessions so far, and I really don't know what's going on.
There's just so much
filling up that stage. Oh my goodness! So
this is the Jeff Minter game, the guy who did Space Draft and Tempest 2000. This is this dude has a history of psychedelic, insane, crazy, high speed games, and this is that, but in VR.
Yeah, and playing in VR, it's really an overwhelming experience. The colors flying at you. It's like being in that last scene of 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
In real life. Just the amount of crap going on screen. And you can kind of manage it because everything explodes, periodically. I don't know. You're going down a track straight ahead, and you hold down a button to shoot a constant stream of bullets. So anything in front of you is going to be dead in one shot very quickly. But there's also this subtle little path that you're trying to go through gates, kind of like small slalom gates.
And when
you go through enough of them in a row, it sets off these huge explosions that clear everything. But I was never really clear if the strategy is really just to focus on those or if I should ignore those and go just shoot things.
Well, the problem is if you watch, slalom skiing in the Olympics or something, and the whole goal is to go between the gates, right? Then that's the idea here as well. There's these two little little poles like you would have in a slalom course. But the difference is when a skier goes over those poles and runs into one of them, the pole like bends down and they live.
this is a problem in this game. Yeah, if you're just slightly off, then you stop in your tracks. And you've been going super fast, and the speed is constantly increasing unless you hit one of these poles. And then you go to zero immediately.
And I can't express to you how fast you end up going in this game.
It's
face melting. And then you're trying so hard to just thread the needle between these two little gates and then you smack into them and it is so jarring.
Sometimes you'll have an item that lets you run into the gate, just go through the gates.
Right.
But I'm never really clear when I have that item because there's just so much stuff going on. These pills fly at you and they give you like bonus 5 points, or maybe you'll have a shield or something, but I can never really tell what I have, what's happening. I have no time to read whatever messages it's showing me.
This game hates blinking. It hates it.
If I look away for a second to just like see what's my score, what item did I get? Nope, you will die immediately. You'll miss something.
And it keeps layering on more insanity, because at a certain point, not only are you barreling at breakneck speed down this track, the track itself becomes bizarre. You can rotate all the way around something in 360, or it'll sort of bend and twist, and then you're like going underneath it and
upside down.
It is a mind trip, man.
But I think if the game was dialed down to like 80%, yeah, might be an instant classic. Well, otherwise,
I love Rez in VR. I actually, after I stopped playing Polybius, I booted up Rez again and went and just played the Area X again. It's it's truly the most gorgeous experience I've ever had playing a video game. It is that level is so glorious. But I love that. I love Thumper. You know, like the extreme speed, cool VR experiences. I'm not adverse to them, but this is like on another level, and it is because it's got this kind of throwback arcade 80s look to it that everything feels much more strobifying and difficult to focus on and assaulting. It is intense.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah,
it's an assault to the senses.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of people talk about Static on PSVR, the Institute of Retention. Are you enjoying that game?
I've enjoyed that game. I finished it in a single setting this weekend when I had the house to myself. And it only took like 2 to 3 hours, but it's an amazing experience. One of the must-try things in VR, I feel. So you're holding the PlayStation controller, but in VR, your hands are locked in a box. So you can't see your hands. You can't actually interact with anything. You're inside this puzzle box, and throughout the game, you realize that hitting the buttons, the shoulder buttons, the D-pad, the face buttons, or the analog sticks do various things on this puzzle box, and you're basically guessing, checking your way around to figure out what activates what. You'll have to do things in a certain order. You have to tilt the controller to see the right side of the box or the left side of the box or the top. There might be things hidden on there, little activators. And once you activate something, maybe something else will open up and show you another hidden layer. You have to look around the room for environmental clues to what's going on in the box. And the game really doesn't hold your hand at all. It doesn't tell you anything. You just have to try everything out and see, oh, maybe if I do it in this order, this will open up, or this little widget doesn't seem to do anything yet. Maybe I have to look at the opposite side of the box and use the face buttons. And it really activates this part of your brain. That's for me, it's that puzzle solving just really, really tickles part of my intellect that I really like. And there's also this really creepy vibe to all of it. You're inside a testing lab, but you're told nothing about it, but there's the one person with you, and whenever you look at him, his face is scrambled like he's on an episode of Cops.
Yeah.
But he's sitting in the room with you, and he's saying these very disturbing things about his ex and about what's going on, and he treats you like a machine, and he treats the machines like people. And he's just going through the tests totally emotionless, and it's very chilling when you're locked there. It's kind of a horror experience, but not the kind of jump scare type thing where it's really cheap. It's just genuinely chilling. How did I get here? What is going on? Is there any escape? And the conclusion is very interesting in that respect as well. So
awesome.
Take 2 to 3 hours and find out what VR is all about.
I'm into that game. I've heard several people have recommended it, so I'm going to check it out. Static Institute of Retention. All right, let's move on to some quick questions. Quick questions this week. All of the people that submitted quick questions that we are going to answer are getting a copy of episode one.
I think it's the full game.
Oh, is it the entire game?
I'm pretty sure it's the entire game. The
game's not out yet, but yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series. We got codes for these four lucky folks. If you want – we got more codes too. We got codes on top of codes. So quick questions. If you want to submit your quick question and maybe get a free game, you can submit them to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or post them in our subreddit, 5x5dlc.reddit.com. There's a sticky thread there as well. The first quick question – comes from James P. He says, quick question. When you're playing a role-playing game with a skill tree, do you look ahead and see what you need to get those sweet ultimate abilities? Or do you just put the points where you need them the time that you get them? Kyle, how do you do it?
I think you have to look ahead. You want to know where you're going. Since there's so many prerequisites for some of the best things you get. But what I really like are games that just let you reshuffle at any time. You have 10 points and, oh, you're tired of being, you know, this action guy. You put them all into stealth for a while and you try that out. I don't like being locked in for, you know, the entirety of my, you know, dozens and dozens of hours by a decision I make early on. I want to experiment. I want to try everything out and see what fits.
Yeah, I like that as well. And too few games allow you that kind of flexibility. One of the things I'm doing, especially with Prey right now, one of the ways that I tend to do it is, which I guess probably says a lot about my personality, I'll get several points banked up and just hold on to them and wait until I get into a situation where I'm having a problem and then try to realize how to best deal with that problem based on how I can spend those points. So if, you know, I walk into a corridor and there's like a giant box that's blocking my way and I really want to get past it, I'm like, okay, well, I'll spend those points on being able to lift stuff. Or if there's a boss that's giving me a hard time and I'm like, man, you know what would be awesome for this boss is this power. I have those banked up. So I almost like have this weird deny myself, you know, pleasure by not leveling up immediately. And I don't think that's good, but I tend to do it because I hate getting in those situations where it's like, oh, if I could just upgrade this one talent, I would have such an easier time right now.
Hey, Jeff, quick question. Why are you still playing Prey?
Because I want to get to the end of it.
Do you?
Okay. You always make fun of me about not finishing games.
Just watch the end.
I don't want to watch the end.
Okay. I was just asking. 2 weeks you've complained about the game, and I'm curious why you're still playing it as well.
It's not bad. It's just I guess I sound like I'm complaining because the stuff that gets in the way of all the stuff I like about it is annoying, and I complain about that.
Great. So it's good enough to keep playing over other games that are not also over out.
Heroes of the Storm.
I look ahead, and to answer this quick question, I look ahead, and I also, like Kyle, like it when you're allowed to respec, but in my personality quirk is I actually prefer when there's a slight penalty to respec. I don't like just like respec willy-nilly, because I like, you know, commit to something. You're going to go to law school, graduate, then practice, then quit, then become an attorney, but you got to get punished.
Become a comedian.
Oh, a comedian. Sorry. Thank you. You got to be punished for making that wrong life decision for several years, just a little bit, but I do. I like a modest
like a
punishment.
Score.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
You can respec all your spell points, but we're going to affect your credit score.
It costs like half a spell point or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, quick question. This comes from Josh Wiener. He says, which of the 3D platform characters is your favorite as a kid? Mine was always Spyro, cuz come on, dragons. Plus he had a bit of an attitude. Back when we had 3D platformer mascots, what was your favorite, Kyle?
When I was a kid, it had to be the Arwing from Star Fox, because that was the only 3D game when I was actually a child. I was a kid in the 2D era, so I'm being kind of nitpicky here. But I've always been a Mario guy. It's just the Mickey Mouse of video games. You know, I had a website, Super Mario Brothers Headquarters, back in 1997, when my mom got me HTML for Dummies, or Learn HTML in 14 Days or something. And that kind of got me where I am today in life. Nice. 20 years
Tell
later.
Me you still have that URL.
SMBHQ.com. It's still up there. I haven't.
Nice.
I haven't actively managed it for over a decade now, but all you can see my really embarrassing 14-year-old writings still there.
Nice. I started reviewing video games at 14 as well. I was writing for the newspaper. Yeah.
We knew what we were getting into.
I like Kyle says he's old, and then Jeff, you one up him with your oldness when you were that age, you were writing for the newspaper.
Newspapers.
Yeah, I know, right? What's a newspaper?
Print they print the news on trees?
Yeah, ridiculous. Christian, favorite platformer mascot?
Yeah, I mean, as the hipster kid I was even then, I loved seeing Yoshi in 3D for the first time. It just blew me away. I know he's not the proper mascot and has ever had a 3D platforming game, but of like any character when I was a kid to see in 3D, that was it. And if this counts, then it's 100% my answer. It's Tony Hawk. If I can count Tony Hawk's Pro Skater as a platformer, it's 100% Tony Hawk.
He's a mascot, that Tony Hawk?
Yes, he totally was a mascot.
Did you see that tweet from Tony Hawk recently where he was in a security line and someone looked at his ID and he said, "Hey, Tony Hawk, like the skater. I wonder what he's doing now." And Tony Hawk was like, "Yeah, this is what I'm doing now. I'm going on an airplane.
Standing here wasting my time with you."
So he's kind of his own mascot.
He's definitely a mascot. Yeah, I don't know if that counts, but that's my answer.
He's the mascot of skating.
I think any answer that's not bonk is wrong, guys. It's bonk.
Bonk in 3D?
No, I guess this. Oh yeah, it's 3D platformer characters. He was specific about that, but
I love Bonk.
No, I don't think it's Bonk. I mean, I was being facetious about Bonk. I do love Bonk. That's TurboGrafx-16 character. 3D platformer characters. I kind of overlooked the 3D part. I didn't even.
It's like Banjo.
Yeah.
Sonic, Mario. Spyro.
I mean, Sonic was great until he went 3D.
Gex, Crash.
Yeah. Does Lara Croft count, I guess, kind of?
Sure.
No, I guess, you know, it's Mario. It's always Mario, sadly. But yeah, it's true. He's, as you said, Mickey Mouse of – he's really the only one that's endured as a mascot too. Their mascots have gone the way of the dodo, you know.
You don't think Sonic has the pull he once did?
No.
After so many awful, awful games.
Did people even think of Sonic – when they think of Sega? I guess they still do, but...
Do people still think of Sega as...
Do people think of Sega at all? They published Persona, right? Didn't they publish Persona? Anyway.
Atlas.
Right. But didn't they own Atlas? Am I crazy? Mm-hmm. Are they not...
Quick question. this is coming from Scooby Diesel 87. It is, what is that one feature/thing that you want to see happen next in gaming? What is the next big thing? Some improvement to VR, the PC upgrading idea for consoles, actual crossplay. What do you think brings the next big boom to video games? That is several questions, but I think the last one is kind of the point, the thesis. What do you think the next big boom to video games is, or what do you want to see happen next in gaming? Kyle, what do you think?
Hardware-wise, I think we're going to see VR transition into AR. It's going to be some augmented reality glasses that can, one, be truly wireless, and two, don't block your view of the outside world. It be in some sort of sunglasses type form factor. You put them on and you can see, you know, your messages and your websites, but also interactive experiences in front of you while, you know, you also are watching your kid in front of you, or even eating dinner on the subway, whatever. You don't have to take your life away as you do in VR.
Don't eat dinner on the subway. It's a bad idea.
That's just rude. I don't know if that's the next big thing, and that I think it's going to be like 5 years at the very minimum till we see something that's consumer that really makes an impact with consumers on these. You know, Microsoft's doing its AR thing, but it's thousands of dollars and kind of wonky right now. So I think we're 5 to 10 years before that really becomes big. But I think that will have a much more upside potential than VR, where you have to just shut everything out.
Mr. Kanata?
I think AR definitely is going to be a big thing. I don't think AR is going to be where gaming is headed, because I don't think I want to be playing a game in the real world. I think what's going to happen is that AR goggles are going to also be VR goggles, and that I'll be able to transport myself into a completely new place seamlessly with my AR goggles. So, you know, sometimes I'll just want an overlay onto my real world, and other times I'll be in my room wanting to play a video game and I want it all around me and I want to feel like I'm in, you know, wherever.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to augment the real world, but it can be on top of it without being integrated into it, if that makes sense. Instead of like looking down at your phone, you just have it right in front of you, and it's right. It could be just a floating, you know, little 3D game. It doesn't have to, you know, the characters don't have to sit on your coffee table.
Yeah. I mean, I think Scooby Diesel in his question specifically points to the upgrading idea for consoles, the PC upgrading idea. I think that is what's happening right now. I think we're in the middle of that weird iterative console idea. I don't know if that's going to stick around, but
Go ahead.
I think in the short term, I honestly, and I know I'm a homer for this, but I really do think VR is going to, even before AR becomes a mass market thing, I think VR is going to be much more prominent than it is even now. I think people are going to realize that these kinds of experiences are really valuable. I think PlayStation VR is going to continue to sell well, and there'll be other entrants into this, and it's not going away. And there are going to be some amazing experiences that convince people that it's the next thing.
Do you know what mine is? I bet you can guess, Jeff.
Yeah, I can. It's going to be games as a Netflix type service.
Oh, buddy. Streaming games somehow. Like that's what I want. I don't know how soon that is, but that's what I want, especially playing the Switch. I love picking it up, taking it with me. I love plopping it back into the dock and playing on my TV. And I would love even more if I didn't have to worry about owning a game. I just had access to all my games. I don't have to worry about the Switch not being powerful enough to play Assassin's Creed Origins. I just know that this is my thing for playing all the things, and I can play all the things. I can take it with me and plug it in and play it on my big, you know, 200-inch wall or whatever it will end up being. That, to me, is the next big thing I want. I don't think we'll see that anytime soon, but that's my future. Ooh, it sounds so good.
Have you tried PlayStation Now?
I have, and it's not there yet for me in terms
PlayStation,
of
PlayStation. Not quite now.
Yeah, it's PlayStation. Not quite fast enough. And I think what Xbox is doing with their what is it called?
It's not. I don't remember. I know what you're talking
about. Really games bland domain. It's like games through streaming or something.
Yeah, it's like download them or something. Game Pass or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Game Pass.
I think we're seeing it and people playing with the infrastructure. I don't think is there to truly support, you know, that type of Gaikai on live PlayStation Now service, but that's what I want to see. I want to see that. And I want to be able to play every single game. I want to be playing Forza Horizon 3 all the time on my Switch, right? Like on that, it feels good as a portable. I want to be sitting somewhere and be like, oh, I would love to get a race in and just be able to get a race in the same way I can be like, oh, I'm at the airport. I'm going to watch another episode of Master of None, and I can just take out my phone and watch it like that. Is that the ideal way to watch it? No, of course, on your big TV at home, it's nicer, but I can pull it up on my phone wherever I am and watch, and I want that for games.
In the chat room, Jeff Fool says his next big thing is a better dynamic narrative writing in the AI, somewhere between Bethesda's Radiant AI and Shadow of Mordor's Nemesis system. You guys think that's likely?
The way he described it, yes, I can see that happening. If truly, truly intelligent, something that could, you know, like fool the Turing test or really be believable, that's a long ways off.
Yeah. Okay, quick question. This comes from Sean Love. He says, what's your favorite extreme sports game? For example, NFL Blitz, Rock and Roll Racing.
Oh, sorry.
And why is the only acceptable answer Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball on the Super Nintendo?
Oh, no.
For the memes.
Christian, how could you not talk about Tony Hawk? Isn't that extreme sports?
Tony Hawk is great, but Tony Hawk is not competitive in the way that NFL Blitz was in the college dorm and crap talking and punching and elbowing and having huge tournaments. For me, I never got into like the Tony Hawk competitive score one up or horse scene. I love Tony Hawk, but NFL Blitz, I guess maybe they're separate extreme sports. I would say Tony Hawk, but for like arcade sports, it would be NFL Blitz. It's so good, you guys. That game's so good.
How bummed am I? I'm so bummed that this NBA Playgrounds game sounds like it's bad because I really wanted it to be awesome. Anyway.
Well, the good news is the EA NBA Jam, which is pretty good, is backwards compatible or forward compatible on Xbox One, and that game's still great.
Okay, cool. What's your answer to this, Kyle?
Yeah, I'll go with NFL Blitz as well. It's I can never really get into Madden. It's just a little too slow and a little too detail oriented. I've played Madden with some people who are really into it, and they're calling audibles and knowing exactly how to read the defense, and they're like actual NFL coaches at that point. And I know football, but I'm not that into it. But NFL Blitz, you know, it's just the basic crazy, you know, in between plays, you're 5 seconds and you're to the next play and you're just throwing a ridiculous pass or jumping over people or spinning out of bounds. And it's great. You can get right into it.
I'm not going to go with one of these suggestions. I interpreted this question as being extreme sports. And there was like a period in the mid 2000s where they were like doing all the, you know, when Tony Hawk was doing really well and they were like, let's make all of these extreme sports into video games. And there is a very underappreciated game that I absolutely loved. And it is called Wakeboarding Unleashed, featuring Sean Murray. And I played it on Xbox and I loved that game so much. First of all, I grew up, you know, wakeboarding and water skiing and boating and all kinds. So I have a love for that stuff. And there's never a game that did that until this one. And it did it really, really well. It did it crazy over the top where you could like wakeboard off of buildings and crazy stuff like that. But it looked awesome. The tricks you could do were super cool. It really conveyed that fun Tony Hawk style, like, you know, crazy over the top, do a million tricks in the air, SSX thing. Actually, SSX is probably my answer to this. But anyway.
So good, right? That's what I thought you were going to say. It's so good.
But Wakeboarding Unleashed, dude. Nobody talks about that game. It was really good. It totally scratched an itch. They never made another one. I think it might be the only wakeboarding game ever made. It's just so – it's such a shame because wakeboarding's rad. It was cool. So thank you all for sending in your quick questions. Again, if you want your quick question on the show, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have our parting gift coming up, so stay tuned for that. But Kyle, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Kyle Orland from Ars Technica. Where can people keep up with your work online?
Yeah, Ars Technica is a great place to go. ArsTechnica. It's not Arts Technical. Ars Technica. And on Twitter, I'm Kyle ORL.
Awesome. Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
I think I'm going to be in San Diego at the Comedy Store on Thursday. It's not 100% confirmed yet, but you can probably look for that. It's weird. I think I might be at UCB on on this weekend also. But for people that have been asking about, this isn't this week, but I've been saying UK shows, which I feel bad. They're all in London right now, so people are like, oh, where are the UK? And I'm just like, oh, just London. But Thursday, June 22nd. Did I say this on the show already? I'll be at a show, doing a spot on a show, Backyard Comedy. Wednesday, June 28th. I'll be at some show in central London. I don't know where it is yet, but FYI, if you're in that part of the city on that day, I'll be doing a spot on a show there. And then on the 29th of June, I'm doing a spot on this show called The Blackout. I know nothing about the shows other than that they were gracious enough to offer me a guest spot, and I'm very excited to be doing them. So if you're in London, hopefully I'll see you next month. Mr. Kanata, what do you have going on?
Well, you and I are going to the big Destiny 2 reveal this week. So get excited for that. We'll obviously talk about it in next week's episode. But if you want to hear us talk about it earlier, I will be covering it on my daily video game show, which is on Anchor. You can find that at anchor.fm/NLB for newest, latest, best. I do 10 minutes every single day about video games. So if you don't want to miss anything that's going on, here we talk about it much more currently, check that out, anchor.fm/NLB. Also, if you have missed any of the newest, latest, best episodes from Anchor, they're all archived on their episodes tab on their app. So you can find all of the stuff I've ever done for newest, latest, best on Anchor by clicking on the episodes button. I also have other shows, a show about movies and TV shows called the Slash Filmcast, which you can find at slashfilmcast.com. And I do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns, which you can find at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, guys, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gift.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Kyle, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Go outside. Go for a walk. I'm in the D.C. area, and the weather's finally gotten nice here. So we got my toddler a trike, and she's been riding around, and I've been walking around with her, and it's just nice to, you know, be outside after 6 months, yeah, pretty much cooped up by the cold. I don't know if you guys can relate to this so much out on the West Coast.
We don't have cold here.
You skip the bad seasons.
Yeah.
Well, we've had a here in LA, we've had, like, since November, we've just been in this general morose malaise that I think it came out of your area. It was like a front.
I'm sorry about that.
Walking going to fix that, Christian.
It'll make it feel more manageable.
It really does. I stand by the parting gift recommendation, but yeah, the season's not changing anytime soon.
Maybe walking with like 200,000 to 300,000 of your friends.
I've been doing that too. DC provides ample opportunity for that.
Christian, what's your parting gift?
I think I've had to have mentioned it before.
You shouldn't.
No, but I need to again, and we've been doing this show for too long, meaning this is my last show. Guys, this was it. It's been a fun run. I used it all to get into the Destiny 2 event, and now I'm done. Marvel Unlimited is so good. And also, if you want a little Marvel, but you don't want to go Marvel Unlimited, some Marvel comics, a pretty good backlog of comics has also been added to Comixology's Unlimited or whatever their subscription kind of streaming. Hey, welcome to I want all the things when I want the things.
And
I use Marvel Unlimited, and it's great. It's great for catching up on stuff. You saw Guardians 2 and you loved it, and you want to read some of the incredible Guardians comics that have come out over the last few years.
What do you read on? You read on your phone?
I read on my iPad mini.
Oh, your mini, huh?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, if I had a big size iPad, I'd probably use, like, you know, the 9.7 or whatever the standard size iPad is. But sometimes between things, like if I need to clear my head and I'm not playing Heroes of the Storm like you might, I sit at my computer and I'll read a book. It's like, you know, 5-10 minute nice break. But I love it. I love it. Marvel Unlimited. There's so much good stuff has come out recently. And with Marvel Unlimited, you can skip like the crap. You don't have to worry about, I paid $4 for this issue and it's just setting up some stupid crossover event that retcons Spider-Man to make him Tony Stark. Ugh. You can just skip it.
All right. Fair enough. My parting gift is probably unique to my area, but I bet you could find something in yours. I went and did on Mother's Day, took my wife and her family to a pottery class where we created pottery. Sat at
you
one
stand
of those
behind her.
Yeah, I died first, and then I came back and put my arms around her. 1988 wants the reference back, Christian. you'd sit at the wheel that spins, and you got clay, and you got water, and you got your hands, and you're like you know it's spinning real fast, and you touch it, and it like forms into a thing. I did it. I never done that before. It was really fun. I created a bowl that I'm going to eat my cereal out of for the rest of my life because I made that bowl with my hands. And they're currently firing it in their kiln right now. And when it gets back, I'm going to put my cereal in it. And it's like candy apple red. And it's my cereal bowl I made that bowl. So I don't know. I recommend people, you know, try to do an arts and crafts thing. The pottery thing, there's a place that like really walking distance from my house that does it. I bet you could find something in your area. Highly recommend it. It was really fun. I didn't think I would like it as much as I did, but I thought it was easier than I expected it to be. Although not easy, but you know, I made a bowl and I thought I wouldn't be able to. So there you go. Anyway, I probably talked about that longer than it needed to be talked about. That is the subtitle for our show, DLC. I probably talked about that too long. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Kyle Orland and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all of our folks in the chat room listening live, also hanging out with us. We appreciate you guys contributing to the show in real time. It's awesome. And all of you that download our show, we are indebted to you as well. Please tell your friends. Maybe write us a nice little review on your platform of choice. All of that word of mouth stuff is the only reason we exist and the only way we tell people about the show. So we rely on you. Thanks for that. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.